Hey, folks, welcome to the Context Machine, episode 695. I'm Brian Chaffin, and I am totally prepared. Can't prove otherwise.
And I'm Jeff Gamma, and Brian is totally prepared. He's so prepared that he knows that I'm going to tell everyone you should check us out at our online home, contextmachine.io. That's how prepared Brian is.
Yeah, that I am that prepared. And you can also use contextmachine.io to reach out to us or find us on Mastodon at contextmachine. Or on Blue Sky at contextmachine.bsky.social.
Yeah, and Brian, here's something exciting for you. We have a sponsor today, Copilot Money.
Ooh, that's excellent. We're going to tell you more about them later in this here show.
Awesome.
Yeah. So your holidays, good?
Yes, and... I came up with a thing that I think still holds true. This is many years ago. Any holiday that you live through is a good holiday, and we both survived. And for me, it does have a different meaning now a little bit because my parents are older. There's been some health scares and all that. So for me, any holiday that I can spend with my parents is special because they're still here.
That's a fair point. That's good.
How about you?
It was a low-key holiday. My mom's in Scotland, and I didn't go back to Texas this year, so I kept it low-key. It was fine.
Yeah, nothing wrong with low-key.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So about three nights ago, I was going to sleep and I had this idea. And
Brian?
Yeah.
Okay. Just to be clear, not that kind of show.
Right. Not that kind of idea.
Oh, okay. Then continue.
Okay. So I started thinking about, I think I was thinking about the craptacular state of all the damn tech bros in charge of the tech companies these days and just how awful they all are as people. And I think that led to I wish Steve Jobs was still with us. And then that turned into, Steve is much of a dick as Steve could be. Mm-hmm. He used his power to make things better for his customers. And I'm not saying that he was doing it as an altruist. He was making money doing it. And the things that he did absolutely made money for Apple, 100%. But he found ways to make money for Apple that were largely, or I should say, I don't know that everything that he did was good for people, but many of the things that he did were good for people. And I would say that Tim Cook has largely carried on that. That path mostly.
Okay.
But differently too. And again, I'm not saying that Steve and Tim are, I don't think they're my friends. I don't think that they're, humanitarians who I'm not trying to put them on a pedestal, but I'm saying that looking at Apple since Steve Jobs came back to this day, there are many things that these companies have done that have been for our betterment. And I thought we could talk about that.
Okay. I would love to talk about this, and I'm actually really curious to hear what sort of examples you have to back this up. And to be clear, I'm not thinking that you're wrong. I'm just curious what it is you're seeing that tells you that Apple has been at least more focused on improving us as people versus Apple, what other companies are doing.
Apple, at the very least, is not focused on screwing us over. I mean, so let's actually start with the encrapification that has been done elsewhere. Facebook has done everything that they can to make their products addictive. Facebook has deliberately targeted young women for their insecurities. To make money, mm-hmm. to make a profit, they have done this.
Yep. They also did that A-B testing thing.
Yes.
Where they were intentionally feeding people, I'll call it depressing content, to see what happened.
Some people got depressing content and some people did not. I would imagine that some people probably got angry content too as part of this experiment. Yeah, 100%. And that Google deliberately made their search results less good so that we their customers, had to load up more Google searches. I mean,
right. Which sells ads.
That is evil. That is evil. Facebook is evil. It seems like most tech companies have done craptacular and evil things in pursuit of money.
Yeah, that seems fair to say. Do you think that this whole tech bro culture, just generally speaking, fits in with what you have been saying about Mark Zuckerberg in specific? About not having the maturity or experience to wield the power that they have.
So my thing on Zuckerberg has been that he doesn't have the wisdom to wield the power that he's amassed.
Wisdom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely think it's the case for Mark, and I contrast him directly with Steve Jobs and Tim Cook, in particular. The broader tech bro thing, really, it's because money can be made in the tech world, and the kind of people that would once have been attracted to hedge funds basically are many more of them have been attracted to the tech world these days. That's
okay.
I think that's what that's about. So let's actually go talk about some of the good things that Apple has done. We should probably start more recently with Tim Cook. Tim Cook's emphasis on privacy, our privacy. Tim Cook's emphasis on having more and more of the decisions that our devices are making being made on device rather than, you know, sending them back to the cloud.
Mm-hmm. Related to that, the stuff that is being sent back to the cloud for the AI, machine learning, whatever processing, for the most part, is going into Apple's own servers where they can't track us.
Yeah, they're Apple is stripping anything related to who we are out of the stuff that they're sending to the servers.
Right. Yeah, and when I say for the most part, it's because if you do something where your request needs something more than what Apple systems are able to provide today, then it offers to go out to ChatGPT for you. and it's doing its best to anonymize those requests. Where that falls apart is if you have a ChatGPT account and you log into it, then it's just handing that off to your ChatGPT account.
That's true. It was funny. I think it was just yesterday we had, or was that the day before? We had, there was
an article. Oh, I know what you're talking about. And I believe it was yesterday. It.
Yeah. So this is a Seeking Alpha article. The title is Cook Commits to Health and Well-Being as Apple Watch Adds New Programs to Fitness Plus. I feel like Apple has very much worked to put us in charge of our own health data.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that benefits us.
Yeah. I feel like I have more access to my health data than I would have otherwise had. And I feel like in many cases, it's presented in ways that that are more approachable.
Yeah. And it's not being sold by Apple,
mm-hmm.
which is not the case. Like, I mean, I'm pretty sure that my Fitness Pal is absolutely carving me up and serving me on a platter. So there's
suck. I hope not.
There's data that's being fed to my Fitness Pal through HealthKit, and once a lot of these apps get this data, it absolutely is being sold. But from Apple's standpoint, it's being protected. It's up to us to not allow the apps that are crappy to have access to our data if that's important to us.
Yeah. And so I want, how much of that data is actually protected? The stuff that's not going into HealthKit is protected with the tracking limitations that Apple puts in place. I guess it wouldn't be for that.
It wouldn't it's going be
directly into that account.
For instance, yeah, I had to
work through that one. I guess
my Fitness Pal, which cost an arm and a leg. It's like $240 a year. It's the subscription is expensive, and I pay it. And but HealthKit feeds it the amount of steps. They're not feeding it the actual calories burned that mm-hmm. my Apple Watch actually tracks. It actually only feeds the number of steps that I've taken, because you know that's the easy shorthand for most people. It's the number of steps you're taking. Anyway. Once it goes from HealthKit to my Fitness Pal, I'm sure that it's being carved up and sold by my Fitness Pal. For sure, 100%. So whatever. The point is, Apple is doing its part to protect us. Apple, don't forget that one of the prime motivating factors for Apple to do Apple Watch was to get our faces out of our phones.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like we just sort of like forgotten that as a whole, that we've forgotten that. And that's a good thing. Now, again, Apple's making money on Apple Watch. Apple Watch is huge at this point. But the fact that one of their reasons why they wanted to make this product is to get our faces out of the phones that they are making, that to me is a good thing.
Yes, and I'm assuming it has helped people to some degree. The following along with the whole Apple Watch thing, you're right. Yeah, when Apple first pitched it to consumers, it was like, look, and now you don't have to pull your phone out all the time. Your phone isn't in your face all the time. But they didn't know how people were going to use the watch.
Yeah.
And when they realized that the fitness part was really taking off, they rolled with it, which is good for a company to be nimble like that. But they also rolled with it and maintained exactly what you're saying, that respect for our privacy. And they're not monitoring, harvesting, and selling the data that our Apple Watches are collecting on us.
Right, 100%.
By the way, I looked up what MyFitnessPal is doing as far as data.
Yeah.
So they don't directly sell your data, but they're sharing it with third-party advertisers, analytics. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
they're getting paid for that.
Of course they are. And cookies and trackers are being used. So of course that's how you end up with some of the targeted ads that you get. And
right.
So yeah, you're right. They're absolutely making money off of your data.
Right. So now let's go back to Steve Jobs.
Yes.
Steve Jobs, I would argue, and I would respect anyone who wants to push back on me, I would argue that this is something you and I have talked about repeatedly over the decades of doing the show, and I've written about it certainly extensively during my stint at the Mac Observer, that Steve single, like overnight changing the way that the way that the PC industry was competing. Going back to the iMac. When Apple introduced the iMac, Steve made the PC, the Mac, a fashion statement, a lifestyle choice. And I would say that was to our betterment as people, because before that, the market was competing strictly on who could put fewer screws into the dang things. And they were just becoming crappier and crappier and crappier. PC companies weren't doing any kind of R&D on anything except for how to make things cheaper at best. And I would say that benefited us. That benefited humans.
That one, I get what you're saying. I feel like it might be a little bit of a stretch with the iMac, but I will agree that it was for the betterment of Apple product users, and by extension, we did see some other improvements throughout the industry, but it's. I USB, think there are places.
USB and floppy is going away.
No, ADB went away.
I'm sorry, USB came along. Yes, right. ADB crap on the PC side, all the various connector choices.
Which there's so many you can buy that still have all that garbage on them. But interesting thing about the whole USB part was that Intel had been trying to get adoption of that standard, and the PC side wouldn't do it because no one was using it.
Right.
And Apple said, yeah, we'll do it. So Apple played a very real role in getting USB adoption in the industry. That's absolutely true.
Right. So another thing that Steve did is he broke the power of the cell phone carriers for controlling sideloading of apps.
Yep. Yep.
And I say hurrah for that. And I say thank you for that. Did Apple benefit? Yes. But we, the people, also benefited from that.
You know, there's a, I think that there's a thing in the industry where the tech bros think if we're doing something that benefits users directly in a really good way, we're hurting ourselves. So we have to focus on our money and give people what we can.
I would say it's more like, it's more like their only focus is making money and sometimes in gaining power.
I'll accept that.
I would say whether or not things benefit us are at best a second thought. At best a second thought.
Okay. Well, all right. And I will agree with that. And along with the iPhone, another market stranglehold that Apple broke was text messaging.
Right.
Because before the iPhone, you paid per message.
Yep, you did. And with iMessage, you didn't. And what the entire industry figured out is that they're going to have to stop that crap.
Yeah, and it was pretty much just free money for the carrier. So, of course, they wanted that.
Yeah.
Because, for those of you that don't know how old school text messaging worked, for all the data packets going over the cellular network, there's this header space with the data that's basically empty. And so what they did was they put the text message, the SMS, into that header space that's already going over the network anyhow. And so they didn't have to create new infrastructure. They just took advantage of a thing they already had, and it didn't really add to the cost for them. So charging you for text messages back in the day was pretty much pure profit.
Right. So I think there are some other things too that I'm not thinking of, but like these are all examples of things that Apple did to make money that improved the situation. I mean, I'm not going to say improved our lives, but
there's a big one that I don't think we've talked about yet.
What?
And that's the music industry.
Oh yeah. Right. Right. Apple saved the music industry from itself with iTunes.
Yeah.
Apple stepped up to try to save publishing from Amazon until the DOJ said, no, we're just fine with Amazon screwing over the authors, publishers, and readers. You need to let that keep going.
Yeah. Apple, that whole thing was kind of tainted anyhow. I believe that on some level, Apple and Steve Jobs had users' best interest at heart, but the way they went about what they did, where they engaged in collaborating for price fixing, that was a big problem. So I think their end goal was a good thing. Their process to get there was very flawed. And the end result is that the government decided to hammer Apple in a way that was so egregiously inappropriate. And then at the same time to turn around and say, okay, everything that you're trying to deal with that we know is wrong, we're just going to let Amazon do it.
Right. Okay. Well, I've got some quibbling to do. For one thing, price fixing is not illegal. Price fixing as a monopoly is illegal. So yeah, well, I don't
when
think
you get
Apple,
all the big publishers price fixing together, that's a problem.
But it was in the face of Amazon having a monopoly power in the market. And again, that is expressly allowed. And actually, it's at least implicit. I don't know if it's expressly, but it's maybe implicit. Legal, because we saw some of the briefings, right? We saw some of the briefings during that trial. And so we're talking about the DOJ suing Apple for price fixing in the ebook space. And this was during the Obama administration.
Yeah. And they didn't sue just Apple. They sued, it was Apple and it was four of the big publishers.
No, well, there, and the pub- there, there were five at the time.
There were five at the time. Okay. And the publishers all ended up settling to make the problem go away for themselves.
Right. And Apple fought it and lost.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, I would say that, right. I would say that we are not better off as readers. As readers, I say this as a reader, let alone as an author. As readers, I would say that we are not better off today with Apple having been spanked in that suit. I would say
we're
markedly worse off.
I agree. And I feel like even though Apple does sell ebooks, I feel like their growth in that space
withered. Their heart's not in it at all. And hasn't been in it since that suit was resolved.
Yeah. I'm glad they didn't just walk away from that because yeah,
same.
That would have just really sucked for a lot of us. But yeah, I agree with you. Their heart's not in it.
Yeah. And I guess to a certain extent, I don't think the TV and movie space was as hurting as music was. I'm going back to iTunes, the iTunes store. So I don't think I could make the same argument about the movies and TV shows.
I think Apple wanted to do the same thing. We know Apple wanted to do the same thing there, but the networks and studios saw how that played out, where it worked great for consumers, but the music industry lost some of the control that they had. And they didn't want to go down the same path. I think Apple TV was a great setup for what could have been Apple doing the same for those markets. And instead, we now have smart TVs with absolutely garbage interfaces and underpowered processors and You can't hardly even buy a TV that's not a smart TV.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so that's my case, man. I feel like, again, this is not to say that Apple is our best friend or even our friend. It's not to say that Tim Cook and Steve Jobs were our friends. It's just that I feel like time and again when both of these men have pursued a new angle, that new angle has at least included doing things like solving problems for people and not solving problems for people in a way that cripples them or gets them addicted or, you know, whatever.
I'm with you. And I'm still really impressed with everything Apple has been doing and continues to do with trying to protect user privacy.
Yep.
Yeah. And and there's one other thing that I wanted to point out. I just totally forgot what it was. Well, that's awesome because it was probably really.
It's probably the best point.
It was probably the best point.
Probably the whole reason we should have done this segment.
You know, the horrible thing is, I think you actually might be right. I can't remember it. Oh well.
Right. Well, let's talk about the Copilot Money, huh?
Oh, I would love to hear about that. Yes, please.
Well, Copilot Money is the money tracking app designed to make your money feel clear, calm, and fully yours. It brings all your accounts, spending, saving goals, and investments into one beautifully designed place powered by smart automation and built with privacy at the center. Copilot Money is available on iOS, iPad, Mac, and now it's available on the web. So people are entering 2026 wanting more clarity, control, and calm around their money. With the Mint shutdown, rising financial stress, and budgeting becoming mainstream again, consumers are looking for a modern tool that they can trust. Copilot Money offers a clean, intuitive, privacy-first approach to managing finances. And with their new web app launch, it's now available everywhere for everyone. So some of the key features include all your accounts being in one place, AI-powered spending categorization, clear, easy-to-understand views on spending. You can see all your subscriptions and upcoming recurrings in one place. You can stay ahead of renewals. Set and track savings goals with clarity and start the new year with purpose. Easy, fast, and streamlined setup. Track your budgets, savings goals, and network seamlessly. There are lots of features that you should go and check out. For a limited time, get 26% off your first year when you sign up at copilot.money. That's new users only and only on the web. You can get 2 months free with code context. That's code context. You can start the new year with clarity, your money beautifully organized now across every device. Again, that's copilot.money. Make sure you use the code context.
Wow. Thank you, Copilot Money.
Right. Thank you very much. By the way, I should also mention they're an Apple's Editor's Choice app.
Oh, cool.
And a Design Awards finalist for 2024, which I think is
very cool.
Freaking cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So you wanted to talk about Plex.
Well, okay. Yes.
Duran in the house.
See, this is one of the many reasons why I love you, Brian. Okay, so what brought on this whole Plex thing for me now is I spend so much time just streaming music, and when I'm home, I have music playing almost all the time, and so I've been doing tons of streaming from Apple Music, of course, and. After a while, though, like when I'm just letting the various playlists or stations that Apple has play, it gets repetitious. And when a song plays that you don't like and you tell the S lady, hey, I don't like the song, and it says, okay, I'll let Apple Music know, that's just passive aggressive crap because the song will still continue to play next time. You hear it over and over. But anyhow, I digress. So I was just kind of getting bored with everything that I was hearing on Apple Music. And so I went back to some of the other things that I used to mix it up. Some like when I'm writing or working on a project, I'll play different stations from Soma FM. And sometimes... Lo-Fi Girl. And for those of you that don't know what those are, don't worry, I'll put links in the show notes. But one thing that I kept forgetting about was that I've got a Plex server and
Plex.
And all of the CDs that I have accumulated over the years have been ripped into Apple Music and I put them on another drive and hooked that up to the Plex server. So I have my music library available just anywhere from any device because I can stream from my Plex server anywhere. I have an internet connection. And I had forgotten about the Plex Amp app. And that gives you a different interface into accessing your music. Because it does all of this really interesting stuff with the way it will just automatically curate your music library, the way it surfaces stuff based on genre or well, hold on, there's tons of stuff in here that it'll do. Like where is it? Now I can't even find this stuff. But it gives you all these playlists that it makes for you. So you can hunt for music, just like by mood or style. One of these deep cuts radio. So all these things say radio, but it's your own music and that you have on your server, and break it up by decade or whatever. The way it goes in and digs through your library and surfaces stuff for you, it's really interesting. I've at my desk, I'm listening now almost exclusively to Plex Amp or my own library, because it's surfacing music that I forgot that I had, and I'm not having to listen to stuff that I don't want. And I'm just finding it really interesting that here's this really great resource I hadn't been taking advantage of. And I'm getting to listen to music that I really like, and it doesn't feel like it's stale or repetitious, because I do have a pretty big library, and the way this goes in and discovers stuff for me, it's interesting. I don't feel like it's just feeding albums to me. It's feeding music to me in ways that I wouldn't have been able to craft through playlists and Apple Music myself. And
You probably could. It would just take more effort than you're willing to.
Maybe, but like, okay, how would I craft my own playlist based on mood?
I would say that you would be in a mood and you would put together a playlist, obviously.
Oh, okay. That's fair. So if I wanted to manually curate the lists,
right?
Yes, I could do this. Or I could let PlexAmp just look up my library and it figures it out, and it just starts playing music for me.
Right. Fair enough. And I'm always happy to talk about dumping Spotify. So yay. So thank you for bringing this up.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And for me, of course, it means it's one less or one more reason to not have to even think about Spotify. But it's also about there are a lot of options out there for exploring our music that don't require just streaming.
Right. But it does require having ripped your CDs. And I know that most of us, I would imagine that most of the people listening to this show right now have ripped at least one CD and probably have at one time or another ripped all of their CDs.
Yeah. I have ripped all my CDs, and good thing you're sitting. I still buy CDs. Even though I can get access to all the music I want, just digitally through Apple Music. But when I go to shows, I like to go find all the indie bands that are playing around. And so when I show up, one of the first things I do is go up to the merch table and ask if they have albums. Mm. And I'll buy a CD or a couple CDs, because I know that the best way to get money into the artist's hands is to buy from them at their shows,
right?
Not to stream music or to buy a digital album.
Right. That's 100% true. So, I'm not a Plex user, and that's only because I'm not a Plex user. It's not a choice that I've made.
All right. Well, how's this sound, Brian? Grab the Plex app or the Plex Amp app, whatever you want, and set up a free account, and then I will add you as a guest to my server, and you can listen to music and laugh at how weird and eclectic my music collection is.
Yeah, but then I'd have to be listening to your music.
Yeah, it'd be kind of dirty.
I want to listen to my music.
Okay, well then, here's a great opportunity for you to rip some music, and
re-rip. In my case, I've ripped all my CDs twice. the last time being lossless, and yet some of them have were probably stored in the wrong place.
Yeah, I can see where that would be a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So sad to be me. By the way, do you remember the song Possum Kingdom by the Toadies? Actually, I think it's just Toadies.
If I hear it, I know I'll know it.
I know that you would know it. They were an Austin band. So they were, or maybe a Dallas band, but they were definitely, it was a bigger deal than, I'm going to cough. They were an Austin band, or maybe a Dallas band, but they were a bigger deal in Austin in the 90s, when I was there than they were elsewhere in the country. But they did have a top 40 hit, a top 40 alt rock hit with, Possum Kingdom. It's a dark song, man.
I just went looked up the lyrics and I totally recognize it. So yeah, of course.
It's a dark song. It is so dark. So anyway, I've been kind of obsessed with it. I've probably streamed it, funny enough, probably 12 times in the last 2 weeks.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. So I asked the Macworld All Star band, hey, would anyone have supported us doing this song back when we were still playing? And was delighted when Dave said, yeah, I'd do that one.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. But anyway, the point is that I love that song and it's really dark. It would kind of disturb me to sing it.
Yeah, but I bet you'd sound really good doing it.
Oh, thanks. Sure. Let's go with that at the very least.
And okay, but this brings us back to streaming. This is the great thing about having a quality streaming music service, because if there's a song that you're like, oh crap, what was that song? You can go find it and play it.
Yep.
And you do have access to a much larger library than the stack of CDs that you have in the back of the closet.
Right. Right. And screw Spotify. Everyone should dump your Spotify accounts. The company's evil.
Yeah. Yeah.
That company, speaking of evil tech companies, that company is actual evil. The crap that they are doing is just wrong.
Yeah, it's horrible when you're a music service and you actively go out of your way to screw over the people that produce the content that you're streaming.
Yes. Yes. All right. I think that's it. I think that's the show, man.
Happy New Year. All right. Yeah. Happy New Year. And Brian, I just realized this is the first show I've recorded in 2026.
Well, I haven't written anything since 2025. It's been a year. I haven't written anything this year. That's the way I'm supposed to say that. So anyway, yeah, right. Happy 2026, man.
Happy 2026.
Let's hope it's better than 2025.
You know, my fingers are crossed and I'm living in hope.
And that is this week's Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, I almost said the wrong thing.
I know what you almost said.
If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at contextmachinepodcast@gmail.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Dr. Boom, recorded for this show.
Yes. And hey, thank you to Copilot Money for being our sponsor this week.
Right. Thank you very much, Copilot Money, for being a sponsor. And I think that's it, man. Cheers.
Cheers. Play music, man.
Oh, Ricky. I miss Ricky.
Yeah.